Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we're talking with Jesse Lowry, and we have an exciting event coming up this Sunday at Blank Park Zoo called the Monarch Festival. We have a program at Blank Park Zoo called Plant Grow Fly, and Plant Grow Fly is all about pollinators, butterflies, bees, hummingbirds, all sorts of things like that that help our plants grow. They're in trouble. And so we've started this program called Plant Grow Fly, and Jesse's going to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Thank you so much, Ryan. You said it very well. I'm the Director of Conservation and Research here and also the local butterfly lady, and I love being the butterfly lady. I'm so glad that we created Plant Grow Fly a few years ago. And before we start talking about that, though, I just want to remind people that the mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And one of the reasons why we created Plant Grow Fly is to use the zoo as a tool to inspire people to take action, to care about nature, and to do something that's actually going to make a difference in this world. And that's kind of a sweet spot for us because we've got 500,000 people in our audience. And so we've got this great platform, but we've also give a portion of every dollar that we make here at the zoo to save animals in the wild. And so when you think of a zoo, you think of the big charismatic megafauna. You think of rhinos and giraffe and tigers and lions and sea lions. But we care about everything big and small. And so we're working to save the butterflies and the bees and the hummingbirds as well.
I like that word, megafauna.
Charismatic megafauna.
That sounds like a band name.
And heavy metal, right?
Yeah.
So Plant Grow Fly, we started in 2014. It actually kind of goes back to the Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation conference we had here in 2013. And it's an international conference we had in Des Moines to deepen the partnerships between accredited zoos and field organizations, those people and organizations that are out on the front lines working to save animals that we have here at the zoo, like all the charismatic megafauna. Well, at that conference, we sat down with other Midwestern zoos and said, what kind of locally, regionally specific environmental problems should we tackle together? And we talked about water quality, of course. We talked about songbirds. But this was right when folks were starting to talk about the monarch butterfly, and the monarch butterfly kind of rose to the top. And the reason why we picked that as our project is because it's easy to help pollinators. It's so easy and everybody can do it. And pollinators are extremely important. They really help produce 1/3 of our global food supply. And a lot of people just kind of have no idea that 1 out of every 3 bites of food that we eat is directly produced by pollinating insects. Corn is wind pollinated. Soybeans don't necessarily need a bunch of insects. The yield is increased if they're present. And so, especially here in Iowa, sometimes we kind of forget that connection that we need to have with nature. Of course, many of us, because of our awesome black soil, have great backyard vegetable gardens, and we need a lot of the pollinators for that too. But everything from ice cream to all the fruits and vegetables, yes. So when I'm talking to kids, I always say, you know, you can thank the pollinators for your ice cream, and you can actually thank flies for chocolate. Flies are the pollinators of the chocolate plant. So did you know that, Ryan?
That's an awesome bit of trivia. I'm going to use that someday.
Okay. I think you should. I think you should. And so basically, you know, pollination occurs to help plants reproduce and thrive, and those plants create the building blocks of the entire biological ecosystem, not just here in Iowa, but nearly every single place on planet Earth. And so these plants are producing the seeds and nuts and fruits and vegetables, like I said, that we eat. But as a zoo conservationist, sometimes I don't know if annoy is the right word. It just rubs me the wrong way when we only talk about human benefits and we only talk about what we're going to get out of it and what we need. Just because we don't eat all of the plants that are produced by pollinating insects, the rest of the animal kingdom does. From songbirds to grizzly bears, pollinators and their plants that they support are just building blocks for the entire ecosystem. And there's a lot of really cool relationships between pollinators and specific plants. Pollinators that have evolved to have specific mouth parts and bodies and long proboscis, or that straw-like body part that can suck the nectar out of plants. And they can only pollinate certain plants. And so there's a lot of intricacies to these relationships that we need to support. And so that's just why pollinators are extremely important. They're often overlooked. They're extremely hardworking for humans and animals. And they're in trouble. So Ryan, have you heard about, you know, the decline of monarch butterflies and the decline of honeybees lately?
Well, you know, being a zoo employee, I've heard it. So why don't you inform everyone else?
But it's not just me talking about it. It's kind of what my point was, is that it's kind of, you know, pollinator conservation is the new black right now. Everybody's talking about it. They have for the past almost decade. I feel like especially the monarch butterfly is kind of the bald eagle of this generation, that we can see that something is happening to make it decline. It's a charismatic animal that we love, that's beautiful. We have nostalgic feelings about seeing monarch butterflies in our childhood, and we're going to make the right decision to save it. Pollinators across the board are declining due to the usual suspects. I could be talking about rhinos or giraffe when I say disease and climate change, habitat fragmentation. But with pollinators especially, they're also affected by modern agricultural practices. But out of that whole list, the one thing that is a common denominator, and also the one thing that individuals, families, schools, zoos, universities can all help with, is habitat. It's extremely important. So we'll go back to the monarch for an example. Monarchs need milkweed. It is their host plant. And what host plant means is it's the only plant the adult butterflies can lay their eggs on, and it's the only plant their sweet little caterpillars can eat. Now, there's several species of native milkweed in Iowa, about 17 species. But a lot of people think of the common milkweed. It's the milkweed growing in the ditches. And what comes to mind, Ryan, when you think of the common milkweed that grows in the ditches? How do you think that people feel about that plant?
Well, with the word weed in it, they probably just think it's just a weed.
Yeah, and people are used to seeing it just take over the ditches. And it also used to invade the corn and soybean rows. But again, with modern agricultural practices and the way that we apply treatments to the fields, it's not going to invade the fields anymore. So we can kind of put that concern to the side. And we need to put milkweed back in anywhere it can go, in the ditches, on farmsteads, in backyards and front yards, and schoolyards and parks and natural areas along railroads. And like I said, ditches is an extremely important habitat because it's contiguous. It is a network, especially in Iowa, where there's a road, at least one road, about every mile in every direction. And so that is an extremely valuable patch of habitat, especially for Iowa, which is the most converted state in the nation, the most converted landscape in the nation. You know, Iowa was once covered in over 90% the tall grass prairie. It was one of the most biologically diverse areas in the whole world. When I close my eyes and think of a biological hotspot, I think of the coral reef or the Ugandan rainforest. That was Iowa a few hundred years ago. I just read a book about when the settlers first came through and plowed the prairie for the first time moving west. And they said that the roots of all the native plants, which these pollinators need for their support and thrive on, when the discs went through the roots of the plants, it sounded like pistol shots because the roots were so strong and had been growing for so many thousands of years. And so now we're the most converted state in the nation. There's only about 0.1% of the tall grass prairie left. And so we're never going to go back to a state covered in mostly tall grass prairie. We are proud of our Iowa heritage. But there's so many cities and towns and farm fields and roads that we need to come back to the middle and put this habitat in every place that we can find a place to put it in. And so that's why we created Plant Grow Fly, is because just by planting these really special native plants that the pollinators need, these special host plants, we can help them survive. So I mentioned host plants, which is how pollinators reproduce. Mm-hmm. But it's not just reproduction that animals need to survive. So we also need to produce food for butterflies and bees. Yeah. And I know that you've done that in your backyard too, Ryan.
Well, I tried. I haven't really been successful this year, but in the past and in the future, I will be. I saw a monarch butterfly flying around yesterday. Could you take us through the process, because it's really fascinating, of sort of this multi-generational journey they go on?
It's actually one of my favorite stories to tell. So let's start in the wintertime. in Mexico. The monarch butterflies overwinter in the fir forest just west of Mexico City. Even though it's Mexico, it's very high elevation, and so it's quite cool. And they huddle in mass in the millions around the trunks of these fir trees, layer upon layer upon layer, and also the lower branches will dip down from the weight of a million butterflies. On some of the warmer days when the sun peeks through, they might wake up from kind of a half hibernation, or what's called torpor, and they will flit off to the nearest stream to get a drink. There might be a few flowering blossoms around for them to sip nectar, and that's, of course, what adult butterflies consume as food. And then in about March, when it really starts to warm up, they wake up en masse and breed and follow the bloom of their only host plant, milkweed, through the central part of the U.S. And so the females will find the first blooming milkweed, maybe in northern Mexico or Texas. They'll lay their eggs and die. The next generation will find blooming milkweed in maybe Oklahoma or Missouri, lay their eggs and die, and so on all the way through the summer. Now, it's Iowa is really special because not only do they get here mid-spring, but then they end up kind of just expanding their population and staying here through the whole summer, and they're still breeding. You will find monarch caterpillars in every single ditch that has milkweed in Iowa right now. And so we're really lucky to be able to have that opportunity, but that's also why we need to put more milkweed into the landscape. So about this time in September is the most exciting time of all. And this is when the last generation of monarchs eclose out of the chrysalis, or that's the word for emerging out of the chrysalis. So we've gone through five or seven, maybe seven generations now, and some of these monarchs got all the way to Canada. So they eclose out of their chrysalis, and they know that they are a super butterfly because of the waning bloom of milkweed and the shortening of days. Exactly. They have elongated wings. They don't have a cape, but they should. And they are physiologically different from preceding generations. They live for several months instead of a few weeks, and they fly sometimes up to 3,000 miles to a place they've never been before, back to Mexico, where their great-great-great-great-great-grandparents came from. And nobody really knows for sure how they find their way, but folks say that it has to do something with the magnetic field of the Earth. And these are the butterflies that we're seeing right now. You see, they're traveling south. They're flying very high in the sky, and so they're not looking for milkweed anymore. They're not going to reproduce until next spring if they make it to Mexico and if they make it through the winter. They need nectar sources. That's why it's really important to have some of those later blooming flowers in our gardens, like goldenrod and asters. I know I've still got some butterfly weed that's blooming. Another really neat thing is when they arrive in Mexico, it's right around the Day of the Dead Festival. And this is, a lot of people know about the Day of the Dead Festival. A lot of people have seen the movie Coco, which my daughter just loves. That kind of talks about this too. And there's just old folklore that says the returning butterflies are the souls of their fallen ancestors, and they welcome the monarchs back to their overwintering grounds. And so it's a wonderful story. It's a truly a wonder of our world, and something that people and organizations countrywide, worldwide, three different countries, Mexico, U.S., and Canada, are all working together to save them. And so, you know, when you think about this long migration route, a couple main reasons for their decline, they've declined 90% in 20 years. 90% in 20 years. And two reasons are loss of milkweed in the Midwest, not in Texas, not in Oklahoma, and I'll explain why in just a second, and also loss of the forest and their overwintering grounds. So let's talk about Mexico first. It's now a World Heritage Site, and they're really getting control over that. And it was a lot of some illegal organized logging, but also subsistence farming for folks that are kind of living in poverty and trying to eke out a living for their family. And so there's a lot of organizations working to help build other sources of timber for them to heat their homes and cook their food. And loss of milkweed in the Midwest. Ryan, have you heard of tagging monarchs?
Yeah. And in fact, we have a video up on our YouTube page that shows just how to do that.
And so through that program started by the University of Kansas Monarch Watch and their founder, Chip Taylor, who actually will be at the zoo for our speaker series next year, they can figure out exactly where monarchs come from and arrive in Mexico. And so you carefully catch a monarch butterfly during the southern migration. So right now is a great time to do it. And you get these little stickers from University of Kansas, and it has a serial number on it. You carefully put the little sticker on their wing and let them go to let them go. And if they make it to Mexico, some of the locals there are paid a small stipend for each tagged butterfly they find. Now, they're not picking them off the trees. These are butterflies that have perished and are on the forest floor. And it's a great sustainable income for these families. And they find the butterfly with the sticker, and they read the serial number, and they can see that it came from Blank Park Zoo, or that it came from Polk County Conservation or Ryman Gardens. And that's how they track the migration. And through this data, we can see that a large, very large portion of all monarchs who make it to Mexico come from north of St. Louis and south of the Canadian border. That's us. We are the most important heart of the breeding range for the monarch butterfly. And so we've got a huge part to play in its recovery efforts. So that's a beautiful migration. And the life cycle of the monarch butterfly is the individual life cycle is a really great story too. Have you ever looked underneath a milkweed plant in a ditch or in your yard to find monarch eggs?
No, I haven't.
It is really a fun activity. It's something that I start trying to look for early in the spring, and no matter how many, and I will let folks know that it's probably in the hundreds of plants that I check because it's one of my favorite activities. I usually don't find them until midsummer, but when you do, you know it. It's this tiny little, slightly conical, creamy off-white egg that's just smaller than the tip of a pin. It's got little lines or striations on it. And the whole life cycle from egg to butterfly lasts about a month. And in that time, in 1 month, the butterfly will increase in size compared to a human baby to the size of an elephant. And the egg will hatch, and a tiny little caterpillar will come out. It doesn't have its stripes yet. It's super cute. It eats its eggshell as its first meal, and it's on milkweed, so then it just starts munching the leaves. Over the next course of the couple weeks, it goes through 5 instars, and what that means is 5 shedding of its skins, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I know that my daughter loves the book Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar, and it's because they are voracious eaters of milkweed. Milkweed is a toxic plant, officially. It's got some toxins in the milk inside of the plant. If you ever break apart a leaf, you'll find that milky white sap. And so it makes the caterpillars and the butterflies taste really bad. And that's the reason for their bright orange color and the stripes also on the caterpillars to warn predators, which are birds usually, that, hey, I taste really bad, don't eat me. And so after it gets through 5 instars, it will make the J. It will find maybe a milkweed leaf, or maybe it's the wooden fence, you know, a couple 10 feet away. Maybe it's the side of a house, something sturdy, and it'll make a chrysalis. And the monarch chrysalis is extremely hard to find in nature. Have you ever seen one in nature, Ryan? Mm-hmm. They're this beautiful jade green color, and they've got a few little gold dots. And if you've ever seen one, you will not forget it. But they're so, so camouflaged. And they say the little gold dots are to refract the sunlight to make them even more camouflaged so predators can't see it. They stay in the chrysalis for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, an adult butterfly will eclose. When they come out of their chrysalis, their wings are all crumpled up, and they have to suck in air and pump their blood from their abdomen to fill up their wings. And then they need to hang there for a few hours and dry and get their strength up. And then they're on their way. And so again, adult butterflies will drink nectar, and nectar doesn't have any protein really in it. It's just sugar. And so that's another reason why the caterpillars are so hungry and eat so much milkweed, is because they're building all of the proteins in their body that they need to make that adult butterfly body. So just everything about the monarch butterfly is intriguing, and that's that's why we're celebrating it this Sunday at the Monarch Festival.
Okay, so that's all about the monarch, but what other butterflies are helped out in Iowa that we need to help?
So we have probably 20, 25 common butterflies that you would see in your backyard. Everything from the cabbage white, which is probably one of the most recognizable insect butterflies, which is not really native to Iowa, but it's not really a harmful invasive species either. We've got the clouded sulfurs. We've got tiger swallowtails, but a lot of butterflies that you actually have in your backyard are teeny tiny, smaller, maybe the size of a penny or smaller. And so many people just kind of overlook those butterflies, which include some of the skippers, like the silver spotted skipper, the eastern tailed blue, which is a beautiful little blue butterfly. And I know in my backyard, I live in Norwalk, and we've just got a regular suburban yard. I've got a big prairie patch. It's about 25 feet long and about 20 feet wide. And in the peak of the season, when I go out, I see no less than 7 or 8 species every time I look of butterflies. And of course, we've got the bees. The bees are, you know, much better pollinators than the butterflies. I like to call the butterflies accidental pollinators because they're not actively gathering pollen to feed their young like bees are. When you look at especially a bumblebee's body, they're made for pollen to get stuck all over their hairy body and their legs. Some even have little pollen pockets that they fill with pollen to take back to rear their offspring. So they're much more efficient at pollinating than butterflies are. But hummingbirds are also, you know, the same flowers and plants are really helpful to bees and butterflies and hummingbirds. It's all the same stuff. And these are native plants. And so if you look at plantgrowfly.com or on blankparkzoo.com website, takes you to the same place, you'll see a list of host plants and nectar plants that will support our native insects. And so to be an official plant grow fly garden, you just at the very least need to include one host plant and one nectar plant off of our list. And you can register it online. There's a 5-minute free online form. You get to name your garden, tell us what plants you included, and then we'll send you a nifty little certificate in the mail and recognize you on the website. And, you know, my daughter's name is Elena, so our butterfly garden's name is Elena's Bee and Butterfly Bed and Breakfast.
All right. So tell us what you're trying to do with Plant Grow Fly. You're always talking about you have a certain number of gardens. You're always trying to increase that number. So tell us a little bit about that and more about Plant Grow Fly.
So Plant Grow Fly is a collaboration of 60 local, regional, and national partners. And I won't try to name them all, obviously, but just a few off the top of my head is Polk County Conservation, Ryman Gardens, many county conservation boards, Iowa State University, Drake, and all kinds of organizations, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, Iowa Native Plant Society, working to encourage people to plant these butterfly gardens. They can be anywhere from a single pot on your back porch to an entire prairie restoration. And so what we want to do is give everybody all the information that they need to know on how to plant these habitats. And even if it is just a pot or a small backyard garden, it really does matter. The Xerces Society, X-E-R-C-E-S, states that in order for your garden to give pollinators everything that they need to survive, like the water and the breeding and the food resources, it needs to be about at least 3 foot by 3 foot. And so try to make it at least that big. But these are gas stations. These are what I like to call pollinator pit stops for the pollinators to come and get some resources that they need while navigating between bigger swaths of habitat. And so every backyard matters, and people are really getting excited putting these native plants in the ground. And of course, native plants have all kinds of other ecological benefits. They slow down stormwater, they help indirectly to produce oxygen, and they provide habitat for all the other critters that are native to Iowa, like beautiful songbirds that you want to your backyard. We had David Mizajewski of National Wildlife Foundation come and do a talk at the zoo, and he said that a nuthatch, which is a common songbird that you have in your backyard, from the time it hatches out of its egg to fledging the nest is a couple weeks, and the parents feed it 6,000 to 9,000 insects, one bird. And over 90% of those are caterpillars. And so if you are a person that loves songbirds and you want more birds in your backyard, a butterfly garden is the way to go.
All right. Well, we're starting to see the end of the show here. So why don't you tell us about the Monarch Fest this Sunday?
So this is the 5th annual Monarch Festival. It's this Sunday at the zoo from 12 to 4. Members get in free, and it's just regular zoo admission for everybody else. We partner with the Latino Heritage Festival and celebrate the southern migration of the monarch butterfly and the Iowa-Mexico connection. And so this is in the midst of the peak of the southern migration of the monarch butterfly, and we invite a puppeteer to come and do puppet shows. We have Los Niños, traditional Mexican dancers, age 4 to 14. They're just amazing to watch and experience. We've got all of our Plant Grow Fly partners here doing fun STEM-type activities around pollinators for all of our guests. Polk County Conservation will be here tagging monarch butterflies in the butterfly garden, so you can take part in that. Neil Smith Wildlife National Refuge will be here giving away free milkweed seeds. Limited supply, but they usually have quite a bit. So if you're interested in planting milkweed for the monarch, you can come to the zoo and get that. But really the culminating event of the day is the bug parade. That happens at 2 o'clock. And so you can dress the kids up in their favorite insect costume, or you can make a mask or some other type of costume accessory here at the zoo while you're here. And we take a symbolic migration through the zoo. Now, there was an addition to the bug parade last year. A giant Chinese dragon monarch caterpillar marched with us in the parade. He will be back, and we're going to add a Chinese dragon-style monarch butterfly to fly with us in the parade this year. And both of these amazing artistic props were made by Art Junkie, which is an art studio for kids in Newton. And so we really want to give a shout-out to Art Junkie for their help with that.
What does Deuce the Lion think of the giant monarch
She will be dropping off the butterfly tomorrow and in advance of the festival just for that reason. And we usually walk it by the lions to make sure that they've seen it once and they're okay with
it. They're okay with it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Deuce the Lion, he sometimes doesn't like new things. So that's why I asked that.
Yeah, he's kind of set in his ways.
So anyways, I think we're at the end now. So thanks for listening to us today. And join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.